On the phone on Static this evening, it is an honour to be speaking to Dr. John Mouse. How are you?
Good, good.
How's your summer, John?
Oh, I don't know. It's strange. It's hot. I have all the above.
Are you an outdoors person?
Unfortunately, no. I wish I was. Maybe when I'm an old man, I'll achieve that goal of jumping into a lake every morning at 7 or something. But no, I'm a sit-in-front-of-the-computer type of person.
Okay, I'm picturing your later life to look like the movie Cocoon. It'll just be you and a bunch of other old people just doing life things.
Yeah, right. And I will share the cocoons, unlike the old people in Cocoon that did not... They don't share the cocoons, and then everybody jumps in, and the cocoons get sick. And you know what I mean? Wilford Brimley, you know, just share the cocoons, man. But no, I wouldn't actually get in the cocoons. Like, to hell with those old people who were afraid of their own mortality, who gave up their one chance at the most magnificent thing. They were given their mortal lives in cocoon. They aspired to unthrone the Most High. So I'm sure there's a special place in hell for the cocoon old people.
I've touched a nerve. You seem to remember that movie far more than I do. But but John, while you've still got your youth and your vigor, you're coming down to Australia where it's the middle of winter, so you'll like that part. And also, you're coming back solo again, because for a while there, after 2017's Scream Memories album came out, you were touring with a backing band. So what's the sort of pros and cons for doing the shows either way?
Well... the pros and cons, I mean, in terms of that way, it's more difficult to manage. Sonically, maybe with the whole live setup and things can get away from you presentation-wise and things like this, and maybe it's not as honest or something like that, as vulnerable, but the other side is maybe there's more energy or something with the whole band, and it's more conventional, so it's less likely to... be off-putting in a unintended sort of way. I would have liked to have brought the band to Australia, especially because last time I was there, it was just myself. But hopefully in this last year, we've done some work with the sound and stuff. So, hopefully it'll be interesting.
Because your live performances can be so impassioned. So what was it like sharing a stage with other people? Did you have to be mindful that there were other performers around you when you had the band with you?
No, because the nice thing about that is that I would only become mindful of it, I guess, when it would do some sort of work to push me on or lift up my legs or whatever when I was getting a little bit tired. You know, I could swear I could sometimes, the energy of that they would give would suddenly be there to pick me up. That was something. But by and large, I was so focused on my own responsibilities there, I didn't have to worry about it too much.
You seem to be someone that puts so much of yourself into the live shows as well. Do you ever sort of blink and have this moment where you wonder what you're doing up there? Or for the most part, are you genuinely lost in the moment when you're on stage, John?
I do think about what I'm doing there, certainly before I start to play in, but while I'm doing it, whenever that thought comes, I just try to turn it back out and remember precisely what I am doing there, which is, it's ridiculous, it's comical or whatever, but it's just trying to give more than you got to give, something you'll never get back, and seems ever more rare.
Do you think you have to be a special kind of person to be a performer on stage, or can anybody do it?
Yeah, I think anybody can do it, as time has shown, but the best performers, I think, probably each do it in a way only they can do it. So I guess it's a question of trying to find that out if you're performing, you know? I mean, you just don't want to lie or sell a bill of goods or whatever you say. You know, it's like the opposite, I think, sometimes of what the movie actors or actors do. It's the opposite, especially without an instrument, you know? Just the vocal, you're trying to be exactly what is fitting and proper for the event at hand, not to be somebody else or pretend or any of that sort of business.
John, I'm also glad that this year sees you doing more touring as well, because last year you had a pretty horrible year. When you were touring with the band, of course, your brother passed away, which was an awful thing. And I also know that you split up with your wife. So did any of that make you not want to go back out on the road again? Or were you determined to still keep on carrying on and being resilient?
Yeah, no, that's, you know, I used to get so nervous before the shows. Like, I mean, I know I could be mine and Cole, but I wouldn't be that sick, maybe, and nervous. But after all the stuff last year, it was really kind of lucky that I had something I could go and do that would require my focus so intently, because it's just about the next indicated step that I got to worry about. I don't have to try to figure any of that out, you know. I mean, I guess I will have to try to figure all of that out, but in the meantime, I can keep running, you know. I can just run, I can just, you know.
So almost perversely, keeping busy and having touring to do has helped you through it all.
In a way, yeah, absolutely. It's something, if I just had to go back to my house and had nowhere to go, I think it would have been much more difficult.
The other thing that was kind of a triumph last year as well, John, was that you packaged together so much of your material. You became a box set man, and the label put 6 albums together, and I know even now it's going upwards of $400 and something for copies of it.
So yeah, but we don't get into that, and that's the prices they're pitching, but they're limited. I don't understand the calculus that went into it. I don't know how premature it was. It was definitely something I found myself responsible for, and I didn't necessarily ask for it. And I really hope that I managed to add some kind of signature onto it, but it got away from me, man. It just lasted a whole year, you know, because then the videos and stuff, too. I mean, I wish I was a fascist, and, you know, who didn't let a single thing get out of the room that wasn't firmly Steve Jobs approved or whatever, you know.
I think it's an accomplishment. I think it's great that people at the moment want to pay over $400 for a copy of this box set. I mean, it's something that's a life marker, right?
I got to monetize, man. I got to figure that stuff out. I mean, unboxers and stuff, the influencers, that's what they want to be now, you know, not rock and roll, but like open up the mode on YouTube and talk about it or something. You know, they've got all that figured out. I got to strike while the iron is hot.
I thought the other thing you could have monetized, John, was your own sounds, because I know you built a whole lot of your own modular synths to make the last record, Screen Memories. So are they all trademarked? Can you make money off the back of that? Or does no one else ever want to use those sounds?
I don't actually know. I got to research about intellectual property, how that works, like open source or whatever with circuits and PCBs and things like that. But yeah, no, actually, that is something I was toying around with a little bit this summer, and I got to get back to it. Is running a line of some modules and stuff. It's just a question of finding an opening there of something there isn't 400 versions of already, something like that.
So if any high rollers in Australia want to set up a meeting while you're down here to discuss monetizing those sounds, you're open to it.
Yeah, high rollers. I promise I will. I will out-deliver.
John, was that a different satisfaction, making those own sounds, to writing your own songs? Did it feel the same when you kind of creating those sounds?
No, I didn't, but I didn't make any of my own sounds. I built a modular synthesizer, and I might as well have just used a VST digital plug-in. You know, I have vastly underestimated the skill and artistry of patch design, of sound design. I kind of figured while I was doing it that all this labor was going to count, in as much as certainly it would be audible. It would be irrefutably audible, and it wasn't. It wasn't audible at all. So no, there was very little satisfaction, unfortunately.
But maybe, you know, it's the journey in itself, what you needed to do.
Yeah, and certainly in the process of the journey was very edifying for me personally, and we'll be able to carry that forward and maybe achieve what I had initially set out to achieve in the future.
I look forward to you bringing yourself and all your sounds down to Australia real soon. People can see you at the Factory Theatre on Wednesday the 21st of August, and you're here with Purple Pilgrims from New Zealand.
Yep.
Which will be a special show. For now, on the radio, we might have a listen to one of the songs off last year's Addendum record. We'll play I Want to Live, which actually goes back a long way, right? This was something you'd been working on since 2003.
Well, yeah, that one's from like 2003, yeah. So it's an old one. It's a tape one. It's a purely tape one. They're better in a way.
Well, thanks for the chat this evening, John. And people can see you down here real soon. You look after yourself, and we'll see you.
Look, thank you. You too.
At the Factory Theatre. This is John Mouse on Static.
Thank you. Have a good day.